From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later on, Hopi Tibetan Prophecy. Now, that's a program I've been wanting to do for some time. We will have it in a few hours from now. Here's what's happening. NOAA forecasters estimate that there's a 30% chance of minor geomagnetic storms that caused on January 20th in response to a possible glancing blow from a coronal mass ejection. Now, the CME came last Friday, but they think now for many time from now until tomorrow, we could get hit with it. In a moment, we'll be talking about EMPs that could come from asteroids or a nuke explosion in the atmosphere. William Forstchen joins us, and we talk about that. A powerful earthquake injured scores of people, buckled buildings, and caused power outages in central Peru. The preliminary assessment indicates that about 119 people have been injured already, 16 houses affected in the Ica region. Nobody apparently dead from this tragedy. It was a 6.3. Jim Berklin, he looks at earthquakes for us. And Jim, my concern right now is it seems like we're being encircled here on the West Coast. It's just a matter of time. Do you see anything?
It's hard to ignore that ping pong reflections across the Pacific. It's been pretty quiet here lately.
And that is what is upsetting to me.
Uh-huh. And we know this back in 1906, Omori, the famous Japanese seismologist, looked at the big earthquakes they'd had in southern Alaska in 1897, great earthquakes. And then there was a great earthquake down in Peru. And that was like on March 31st. And he spoke out in early April. And he said, now it looks like big ones do to fill the gap there.
Do we generally get any,
or more likely California?
Jim, do we generally any get advance warnings and signs before a big one hits?
Oh, well, surely.
Here?
Yes. Well, the first thing I look for is the maximum tidal forces, and we are getting incredibly high tidal forces this year. I'm especially concerned about May, when the full moon and the closest approach of the moon, perigee, for the several years, is only going to be 2 minutes away from it. They can be 8 days between the two phenomena.
Okay, but this will be in May, so we'll look for it. Make sure you go to Jim's website. It's all linked up for you at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. If you hear the sound of running water the next time you call a coworker on his or her mobile phone, don't be surprised. Three-fourths of Americans with mobile phones say they use them in the bathroom, according to a new study. Approximately the same number of men and women have used the phone in the bathroom, according to a survey of 1,000 people. After years of enduring sexist jokes and taunts from their male counterparts, women drivers can finally take heart. A new study suggests that they're actually better at parking than men. Covert surveillance of car parks across the United Kingdom shows that while women may take longer to park, they are more adept than men at maneuvering into a parking space. So, ladies, there you go. The next time some guy holds his fist up at you driving, you're a better driver there. With a healthy lead in the final polls of the day before the Florida primary, Mitt Romney has depicted chief rival Newt Gingrich on Monday as increasingly desperate in the race for the Republican presidential nomination. Let's check in with Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. Greg, tell me a little bit about this one now. Is it do or die for one of these candidates?
Well, it's not going to be do or die for Mitt because he's got a huge amount of money and he is the establishment candidate. But for Newt Gingrich, if he pulls this off, he could be the big hero and he is going to be going all the way to the convention. However, if he doesn't, this is a winner-take-all. If you lose by one vote, if you come in by number two by one vote, you get no delegates. And he has spent a lot of money there and is really working to try to win Florida. But if he doesn't, he's going to spend a lot of money and waste a lot of time. Now, the other two candidates, Santorum and Paul, they're off in Nevada and Maine, and they know they can't come in close to winning. So they're already, you know, they've spent their money. They've given it their best shot. They're going to leave it go to Romney and Gingrich. But they're already off campaigning, and people, particularly like Paul, he's going to be in it for the long term. He's going to be in it for the next 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, he's going nowhere. But now Romney back in Florida apparently has a commanding lead based on all the polls I see.
Yes, but according to some people reporting down there, that he has a commanding lead because he had a lot of lead time, spent 10-1 to Gingrich, and just in the last, 4 or 5 days, now they're spending 1-1 each on TV and radio advertising. So Gingrich may pull it off. Who knows?
Let me get your reaction to this, Greg. Here is Romney and Gingrich beating the heck out of each other. I mean, if one of them gets the Republican nomination, the other one's got to say something nice about him at that time. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama just simply sits back, does his presidential thing, and you know what? The way it's going, I still think he's going to walk right into the White House again.
Well, it just depends on a lot of things. The economy, war, you know, things break out in the Middle East, and he's going to be a wartime president. And I don't think there's ever been a wartime president, a bona fide wartime knockdown, you know, metal-to-metal Highlander, you know, clashing. And this would be Iran in the Middle East, and there could be involvement by China and Russia because they've given a lot of high-tech weaponry, torpedoes, missiles, which I wrote about on my site today, to Iran, that it could he could be a shoo-in for presidency. However, the economy could also sink him and trip him up. So your guess is as good as mine. It's going to be a close election. Even people like Ron Paul are within 3 or 4 points. Romney is about even, and Gingrich is a little bit behind Paul. All the Republican contenders in nationwide polls do fairly well, believe it or not.
In spite of what they're doing to each other.
Correct.
All right, Greg. Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. EMP, an attack, perhaps a hit from an asteroid, a nuke. William Forschin joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. You want to hear this. Don't go away. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. William Forschin is a professor of history and faculty fellow at Montreat College in Montreat, North Carolina. His book, One Second After, was cited on the floor of the Congress before the House Armed Services Committee by Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, chair then of the House Committee tasked to evaluate EMP weapons, as a very realistic portrayal of the potential damage that this kind of an attack could do on the continental U.S. And also last week when we talked with Daniel Derda, the possibility also of an asteroid could cause this problem too. For the next couple hours, we're going to be talking with William about EMPs and what you can do to protect yourself. Because, William, based on what you and I have talked about over the years, government isn't doing anything to protect us from this, are they?
Good day, George. It's great to be with you again. And yes, I think you and I started this conversation a couple of years ago, and we've yet to see the federal government take any realistic action to prepare this country for an EMP event.
Why?
Why? I first started working on this book about 8 years ago, and in my first conversation with Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, who is really the driving force in Congress to prepare for an EMP, one thing he said to me, not once but many times, was the problem with the issue of EMP is there is no constituency. It sounds like sci-fi.
Conspiracy, you name it.
You got it, and it's just simply ignored and passed on to the next congressional session. And we are still wide open for a devastating blow, either from a solar event like we saw last week or a military EMP event.
Explain for us, William, what an EMP is and how this kind of an event can be created.
Okay, EMP, shorthand for electromagnetic pulse. Two major ways of generating it. Let's do the military one first.
All right.
Detonating a fission nuclear weapon, relatively small weapon. You don't need the heavy fusion bombs of the Cold War. In other words, a type of weapon that, say, North Korea or Iran is currently developing, detonated about 250 miles above the Earth's atmosphere. The gamma ray burst in that first nanosecond of detonation, the gamma ray burst spreads out. It hits the molecules of the upper atmosphere, triggering an electrostatic discharge, sort of like tossing a pebble that starts rolling downhill and starts an avalanche. This electrostatic discharge builds up, and by the time it strikes the Earth's surface, it could be actually a buildup into the thousands of volts per square meter. That then feeds into the millions of miles of electrical wiring we have, which acts as antennas, feeds this overload through our power grid, and 1 second later, the entire power grid of the United States can be knocked offline.
What's it do? Fry it?
Just cooks it right off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, any one of us, have you ever been out and walked underneath a high-tension power line?
Oh, and you can hear it going like that?
You got it.
Yeah.
Now, just look between two pylons, say 200-300 yards apart. Figure out if you coiled that wire up and laid it out, how many square meters that would be. And then imagine feeding an extra 50 to 100,000 volts into that line for a split second.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Blows right off the power pole.
What would it also do to people who are connected to the grid in their homes? I mean, would it go through and hit their houses, blow up houses, catch them on fire?
Yeah, there's almost the old joke that if you buy a new HDTV, you definitely got to get a new circuit breaker in, because otherwise you're going to get hit the next day with a lightning bolt. It would be rather similar to a lightning strike quite near to your house. It would blow out all of the major electrical components in your house and your wiring.
Oh, and could cause a fire.
And yes, in many cases can. In fact, the Soviets did it to themselves in 1962 in what was known as, I believe it's Test 182. You can Google it up online, Soviet EMP test, where a power plant 500 miles away from the epicenter of the detonation burst into flames because of the EMP overload that fed into the transmission lines emanating out from the power station. Suddenly there was a blowback going back in, and the power station burst into flames.
Now, William, technically explain how this would happen.
What happens is, it's not that the real point of vulnerability is not necessarily our generating systems. I was at a conference a couple of years ago where a real team of experts pointed out to us that 80% of our generating capacity in the eastern United States would still be offline 5 years after a major EMP event. Why? We don't have the replacement parts anymore. Guess where they're made?
China.
Right. But even if we did have the generating capacity online, it's how do you get the electricity from the generating system out across to where we need it? The really vulnerable part of our system as well are the hundreds of thousands of miles of high-tension transmission lines. I saw some rather frightening high-speed photography of these wires bursting into flames and these ceramic insulators that hold them exploding.
So okay,
if you've got the generating system, you got no way of getting the electricity back out to the people.
I want to come back to the military application of an EMP, but let's talk solar. Let's talk asteroid for a moment, William.
The solar situation. My phone, I have one of these alerts that's tied into NOAA and NASA. And suddenly it started clicking off last week. We had a rather significant solar event, as you pointed out, coronal mass ejection, which essentially can generate the same thing. There's several forms of EMP, EMP 1, 2, and 3. And we're not going to get into the technical on it. It's a different kind of frequency. But if that CME, coronal mass ejection, hits the atmosphere, it will generate a global-wide EMP event, particularly in your northern and southern latitudes. Closer to the equator, not as significant. The event that we saw last week was the most significant solar storm in 5 years.
And that was an M9, right?
Yes. And it was relatively minor as compared to the greatest one that we have records of, known as the Carrington event, which occurred in 1859, blew out what we could call the Victorian Internet. The entire telegraphy systems in the Northeast and England short-circuited offline. The energy output was so intense that railroad ties were bursting into flames.
My God.
Fed through the rail lines.
Did they know that this was a solar event at that time, back in the 1800s?
There is a wonderful book. It's called The Sun Kings. The author's name is Clark, like Arthur C., but not Arthur C. He's a British solar astronomer. And only a couple of weeks after my book came out, a friend called me up and said, "Good heavens, Bill, you've got to read The Sun Kings." I devoured the book the day it arrived, in which this solar astronomer historian looked at this gentleman named Carrington, who in 1859 was the first one to observe a solar storm on the surface of the sun and linked it to events that were happening here on Earth a couple of days later.
Okay. What are you more concerned about, an EMP pulse from an atomic bomb or from a solar event?
Oh, that's like asking me, do I prefer to choose death by drowning or death by fire? I'm concerned deeply about both. Now, ask me to give you a probability on a military event. There are just too many variables. It depends upon who's president, how he reacts to a potential threat from Iran or North Korea, which I'd have to say we haven't seen strong enough reaction in the last 4 years. There's many, many variables. Solar event, everybody I've talked to, people at NASA, people at NOAA say, Bill, it is inevitable. Sooner or later, most likely within our lifetimes, we will be clobbered by a major EMP event if it doesn't happen as a military event first.
So regardless of where it's coming from, people are convinced it's going to happen.
It will happen sooner or later.
But you're not going to go out on a limb here and say you're more concerned about one over the other.
I'm deeply concerned about both.
Okay.
May I ask, I remember, I think we talked about this once before a couple years back. How old are you?
I was with Marconi when he invented the radio. All right, that's all I'll say.
I actually had a friend whose father helped Marconi rig up his first transatlantic transmission.
I know, I was with the guy.
Yeah, okay.
I'm the friend.
do you remember duck and cover when we were kids?
Yep.
You know, get underneath the desk.
But I've been around. I've been in this business, William, since I was 19. So yeah. I've been around.
Yeah. The great threat was, of course, when you and I were kids. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, just outside of New York City. We had this image of MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction. We and the Russians were going to pop it, throw the missiles back and forth, Armageddon, it's all over in 30 minutes. I actually talked to some people who are experts on this issue, said, you know, Bill, that would be more humane. It would take all of us out within a matter of minutes. In the turbulent political situations we have today in Iran, North Korea, and elsewhere, and the proliferation, nuclear weapons did not disappear at the end of the Cold War. Estimates run as high as 30,000 still exist around the world. Now, that material falling into the wrong hand, it's a first strike kill weapon. The thing with the Russians was, ultimately, they were rationalists. It was great to be dealing with atheists, in a sense, because they wanted to inherit a world that still functioned, worked, except they had eliminated us. But they knew that if they attacked, mutual assured destruction, everybody would be living, the few that survived being smoking.
Nobody wins.
But suppose you're dealing with a madman. Suppose you're dealing with some guy who talks into a well and believes he's going to receive 72 girlfriends on the day.
Well, or Hitler. Hitler would have used it had he had it.
Oh, hell yes. As he's in the bunker in those last couple of days, and if he had the capability, don't you think he would have done it?
He would have dropped it on Britain. He would have dropped it everywhere.
Right. We have a situation now of great political instability in North Korea. The new glorious leader. How stable is he?
Well, he may be stable, but I'm not so sure the military folks around him would be.
Precisely. That has been a great worry for me, in that it's a formula as old as history. If your own political power base has started to become shaky, trigger an outside crisis to rally support around you. An example, the junta in Argentina in the early 1980s. They were tottering into collapse. What they do, they tried to trigger a war with England, except England handed their butts back to them. What's to prevent the madman who's running North Korea today, seeing a potential threat from the military junta around him, deciding, I'll trigger an outside crisis, and then they'll have to follow me.
Yeah. And anything could happen. William, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment, continue talking with you about an EMP event. I want you to take us through the stages. If one explodes in the atmosphere, what is it like? What do we hear? What do we see? And then how does it begin to affect us? And how quickly does it affect us? William Force Chen, his website, of course, onesecondafter.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, my gosh, the month of January is almost gone, and of course, you know, we're trying to sign up as many Coast Insiders to the new club as possible, and we're doing so. We signed up Chris. He's a Coast Insider. He loves it.
I can go back months and months and listen to shows that I missed from way back when. I mean, one of my favorite shows already was the Human Mutilation show, which I believe may have come out last summer.
So you're sitting on your chair and you're saying, I want to be an insider. I want to be a member of the club. How do I do it? Well, it's less than 25 cents a day, and you simply go to coasttocoastam.com right there at the top or down at the bottom. It says Coast Insider, and you just fill out the information, and there you are. We'll be back in a moment. More when we talk with William Forstgen about EMPs next hour. We'll take your phone calls with him on this critically important subject. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. William, let's get an example here. Someone launches one of these things. One, we're going to know where the missile came from, aren't we? Or is this going to be something on some boat in the ocean?
Not necessarily. You just hit it. Recall 2 years ago, the Obama administration on September 17th, 2009, canceled the development of an ABM base in Poland. A horrible day to make that decision because that was also the anniversary, the 70th anniversary, when Poland was betrayed by the Soviet Union, which invaded them along with the Nazis. Now, that missile base was to protect those from a direct launch from Iran, which would have been detectable. There's been a lot written recently about Iran testing ship launching out in the middle of the Caspian Sea, doing vertical launches, get the rocket up 250 miles, detonate it, and then declare, oh, well, that one didn't work. All you need is a couple of cargo ships armed with some missiles in the Gulf of Mexico, where we do not have in place advanced tracking systems. Do the launch, arc it up over the center of the United States, another one over the eastern United States, and you've taken us down. From time of launch to detonation, 5 to 7 minutes.
No Jeez, problem. That was my next question. That's it?
That's it.
What does the person on the ground hear, see when this detonates?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Unless you are...
You don't feel the concussion? Nothing like that?
Well... First of all, with a detonation 250 miles up, there is no atmosphere to carry a blast concussion. You could very well see a flash of light, but at 250 miles, it's not going to damage your retina. But within that first second, anything that's electrically driven is just suddenly going to shut down. Now, we're not sure on the percentage of cars that could shut down. I've heard figures as low as 5%, as high as 95% from vehicles made after 1990. I'll tell you the bad place to be. You don't want to be on a commercial flight that day.
Why not?
Well, when Captain Sully, the great captain...
And we can't help that, you know? We either are or we aren't.
Yeah. Now, when Sully, remember when the strikes as he took off from LaGuardia, he still had power. All of your modern planes are computer-driven.
Oh.
Sully still had electrical systems that, as he banked and turned the face onto the Hudson and bring that plane in, as he moved the stick, the computer drives actuated the ailerons, the elevator, rudder control. He still had control.
He had control still, yeah.
Now, I'm a pilot. I own an antique aircraft. Where when I pull and push my stick or kick my rudders, they're hooked to good old-fashioned wires that go out to your control surfaces.
You're almost doing it by hand.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And it's cool. You're really flying by the seat of your pants.
So you're saying planes would drop out of the sky?
Airplanes today, the pilot pushes the stick, goes, it's fed into a computer, which sends a signal to the hydraulic actuators, say, on the elevator, which then activate. There's no hard actual wire going from the stick anymore. Now, remember the incident with Air France a couple of years ago? Where
it was an Airbus, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was a 330, I'm not sure. But almost all of them, next time you take a commercial flight, take a peek in the cockpit as you're going.
Oh, sure, the way I look? You know, I'm Lebanese, for crying out loud. I'm not going to look in the cockpit.
I find it's not healthy to ask too many questions about, gee, I'm a pilot. Can I look at this? No.
Yeah.
In your seat. But the scary part of that is you could have a Captain Sully sitting up front. We get hit by an EMP, and 1 second later, nothing works.
And you just drop.
You just drop like a rock.
And this would be every plane that's out there.
Not
of the big ones, the big ones, commercial planes.
Yeah, almost all of our big current commercial planes that we're putting out are so computer-driven. I was just reading...
How many flights do we have up in the air at any time?
You know, you can find that right online. Just Google up...
it's got to be thousands.
At any given moment during the daytime, there's about 2,500 to 3,000 commercial aircraft crisscrossing the United States. I was appalled when I read the first congressional study back in 2004 in which a person dismissing the threat of EMP was saying, at most we'll have a couple of thousand casualties. I would love to confront him and say, would you please rewrite that again while flying on a commercial aircraft and a warning suddenly goes out that there's an EMP strike on the way?
Now, if this happens and we take this kind of first strike, do we retaliate? But who do you retaliate against? If this is off some ship, some boat somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico or the Pacific Ocean, how in the heck do we know where it came from?
You hit it exactly, and it's a profound moral question. We might not even know who it came from,
where it came from. You can't take out the entire planet.
Well, okay, let's build a scenario. We have two launches coming off of the Gulf of Mexico, one off of the Pacific coast. About 10 minutes later, those ships blow up with somebody shouting Allah Akbar as they hit the detonators. The ships sink. How do we trace it out? Maybe that ship docked at a dozen different places from the time it initially acquired the weapon system.
Right.
Do you recall last year when a Russian cargo container ship disappeared for like 8 or 10 days?
Yeah.
And here we are with all our modern surveillance equipment and satellites and everything.
Couldn't find it.
We couldn't find the bloody thing for 10 days.
Did we ever find that airliner that disappeared?
Yes.
We did.
They finally found the cockpit recorders. There was just a print-up on it a couple
of years ago. It was a 737 or something like that, wasn't it?
Oh, no. Are we talking about the Air France one?
No, there was a Boeing plane that just disappeared. Not with people on it. The plane just disappeared.
I have not.
I got to go back and dig that information up. It was a couple years ago.
That bothers me. I have not heard about that one.
Yeah. Okay.
Before we went to the break, you mentioned, you know, what happens in that first second? It's going to be aircraft plummeting, and then the whole electrical grid is offline. You definitely do not want to be in an elevator 80 stories up.
Oh yeah, then you're up a creek there too. What about our defenses?
That is a tough, classified question to ask and answer. I have to always emphasize, I deal strictly with declassified, unclassified information. I go to a lot of conferences. DOD's invited me to a couple of different places. I've been at the War College, but very strict. I simply work off of unclassified information. So I cannot give you a clear answer as to our military assets here in the United States.
By the way, it was a Boeing 737 disappeared in Mumbai, the old Bombay.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? It happened about
four or five years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gone. Nobody knows where it is. Somebody's got it. Somebody took it.
Somebody's got it, and who knows what the hell they're loading on?
Exactly.
The assets we have overseas, in terms of a military event against the continental United States, would still be there. And to try and answer your other question, what do we do back? Let's say we trace it back to Iran. Do we annihilate?
And do you believe anybody when they say that? See, there's that possibility, too, that they blame someone else so they can create a war. Who knows? I mean, I don't trust anybody anymore, William.
Neither do I. And listening to your program helps me with that.
I mean, would we, when I say we, this covert government that's out there, would they do this to us? These globalists who would love to see problems?
I couldn't answer that. I can say that with a military event, the shattering of the United States and our infrastructure and the projection of 90% of all Americans dead within a year, and that is one hell of a grim number.
Oh, my God.
Realistic. Think of the economic, political, social, military power vacuum, and then the global confusion that's going to trigger afterwards. Nature abhors a vacuum. That type of political vacuum, think of how that's going to resonate around the world in the first couple of days.
Well, if someone takes us out, then I think there would also be, this is how militarily I look at things, somebody would then attack our allies instantly.
Of course.
Yeah. And then we'd know where it came from, but it'd be a little too late for us. Unless right. We still have some capability in some bunker somewhere.
I have a character in my novel that I developed this as a novel to try and get the word out. And it's been a bestseller for a couple of years.
Should be a movie.
We're working on that right now.
Okay.
And about halfway, two-thirds of the way through the novel, some word gets into the village where people are dying like flies at this point about, well, we think these guys did it, and, oh, do we plaster the hell out of them? To which this character responds back, does that change anything here?
Yep.
Does that save the lives we've lost? Does that provide medication for my daughter now? Does that change anything? We've lost. EMP is a war-winning, destructive system in which America could lose its position in 1 second and never regain it.
Is there a possibility, William, that technically an EMP pulse bomb would not do this?
Everything I have seen says it's beyond what we think it might be. There are two declassified, documented detonations of EMP weapons. You can Google them up. One is Starfish, and, you know, one word, Starfish Prime, which was a detonation 500 miles south of Hawaii in the early 1960s that blew out a 1960s overbuilt power grid system in a fair part of the Hawaiian Islands. The other one, as I mentioned earlier, is Soviet Test 182, which is blowing out a power plant 500 miles away from the point of detonation. Now, consider how overbuilt our electronics, our automobiles, our power grid was in 1960 as compared to the highly delicate computerized-driven systems we have today. That the slightest power fluctuation can burn it. We're far more vulnerable now than we've ever been before.
I can't believe that there's no one in Congress anymore other than the people you've dealt with who are doing this and pushing this and trying to get something done. How possible is it to insulate the grid?
Congressman Bartlett has pointed out, and let me add a great point of frustration here. Bartlett has a wonderful team of people working around him. One of my heroes is Dr. Peter Pry, who has spent 30 years studying this. They spent five years developing a bill that went up a year and a half ago to start the hardening, at least creating the bureaucratic infrastructure.
Right.
It passed the House unanimously. Now, we're talking about a very divided House 2 years ago. Boom, went right through. Went from committee, unanimous pass, then had to go to the Senate, and one senator killed the bill because it didn't have the perks for her state that she wanted. One senator, and you almost had to hit the delete button.
What perks did she want? Did she want a better insulated grid in her state, or what?
She just wanted more for the state of Alaska.
Jeez.
You almost had to hit the button like fortune's about to have a Tourette moment. When she did that, she burned out 5 years worth of work.
Gone.
How much it costs to try and get a bill even passed.
Oh, I know.
Millions and millions of dollars.
What about the word nationwide, mainstream media, TV, network news, cable television? Are they touching this? I don't see it.
They touch it But frustratingly, it is so bloody inaccurate most of the time. In your own programming, you have some people raising some very, very serious, valid issues on a number of different fronts.
Yeah.
But then you have somebody that comes along with just some wild, cockeyed idea, not even on your show, but somewhere else, and everybody points in that person's direction, goes, oh, you just dismiss the whole thing. It's all crazy. That's the problem with EMP. Doesn't it sound sci-fi?
Yes.
And therefore, it gets dismissed. Or Hollywood does such insane things. I mean, one of those Oceans, that was Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 12, we'll EMP Las Vegas, and we'll knock the power out for 30 seconds, and then we can break into the vaults. The one that really drove me wild.
For 30 seconds.
War of the Worlds. Remember Tom Cruise? Oh, just change the solenoid. My car works again.
Yeah.
And therefore, you have a public that is ill-educated or outright ignorant as to what's going on, and the people who really do know what's going on, they're made to sound like they're ridiculous.
In your opinion, is it easier for a rogue nation or a nation that has nukes to do an EMP pulse attack than a regular conventional nuke attack?
I would define EMP as a first strike weapon in the hands of a third-rate power. When we and the Soviets were facing off, as we were talking about a bit earlier, it was mutual assured destruction. You EMP us, we EMP you.
Yeah. By the time your missile hits us, ours is on the way.
And you don't want to deal with that afterwards, guys, do you? So we're not going to do it.
And William, I was in the Navy. What was our greatest nuke deterrent? Submarines.
Right. Right. A couple boomers out there loaded with MIRVs. What, each boomer carried the equivalent of, was what, 20, 24?
18 to 24 warheads?
Well, each missile carried up to 10. And I believe in what they would call Sherwood Forest.
So that was a deterrent.
Yeah.
They knew within minutes we had subs and we could launch at any time. And so they said, you know what, we're not going to screw around. The Cuban Missile Crisis, which a lot of people don't remember anymore, you know, put us on the edge of a nuke war with the Soviets. And the reason why it never happened was because Khrushchev and Kennedy were smart enough to realize nobody wins.
Right. And yet, an example I like to give is so suppose I come home tomorrow. I'm hearing gunfire. I live up in the mountains here in North Carolina. You hear gunfire occasionally. But let's say a new neighbor has moved in, and I'm hearing gunfire, and I peek over the fence, and he's target practicing on a picture of me. Well, listen to the rhetoric coming out of Iran. We're going to bathe the great Satan in nuclear death.
Yeah.
We're going to annihilate Israel. We're going to rain nuclear destruction down upon the world.
Yeah. I don't hear things like, we love you. We want to live in peace. We just need nuke power for our homes. Please help us. I don't hear that.
Nope. So if somebody's taking target practice on a picture of me and shouting how he's going to kill me, I think I'm going to take it rather seriously.
Yeah, I think you should.
And we are not doing that with our foreign policy right now. We are not conveying a clear message. Don't even think about it. Because you won't be there tomorrow morning. We're going to go after the leadership, not the innocent civilians. We're going to go after you.
One by one.
The tragedy is, let's say North Korea did it. How do we get back? There's millions of people stuck on the surface who are starving to death. While the leadership is 1,000 feet below, you know, underground,
yeah,
laughing.
That's right. Doing well.
What's the moral question there? Do we annihilate millions of people who are innocent? Or do we convey to that leadership beforehand, we know where you are, and we will stop you before you even start?
I like the latter. That's the smarter approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always the innocents that get hurt.
Exactly. I teach a course on World War II at my college, and I try to point out repeatedly that in 1938, if only we could have shown to the people of Germany and Japan, listen, we might seem like patsies and pushovers, but here's film footage of what Dresden, Berlin, Tokyo, Hiroshima, and Nagasaki are going to look like 5 years from now if you keep pushing this. It never would have happened.
You got that right. William, stay with us. We're going to come back. in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Final hour with William Forschin. We're going to take phone calls. I know many of you are calling right now. We'll get to you in just a moment. We will take calls when we come right back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about EMPs if there's an attack. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.